I am Shusara Kona Kumara. Welcome to Satsang. You are beginningless. You are endless. You are divine. Good evening, everyone. Thank you so much for joining us for Satsang tonight. We're going to go ahead and get started, so take a nice deep breath and I will clear the space. Mother, Father, God, through the Great Central Sun Hierarchy, through the Office of the Christ, through the Order of Melchizedek, I call upon Archangel Michael to bring the sapphire blue ray. Cut away, cut away, cut away anything in all of our four lower vehicles not emanating directly from our I Am presence. I now call on Archangel Zachiel, Keeper of the Violet Flame. Blaze, blaze, blaze the violet flame through all of our four lower bodies. Transmute, transmute, transmute all the psychic debris Michael has cut free. I now bring forth the invincible ring pass knot and the mirror blue light of invisibility to completely surround each of us. And I call forth a shaft of pure Christ light, one to surround each of us, and I ask that they be brought to the center of the earth, where I call on Archangel Gabriel to seal them. And I ask that the legions of Michael completely surround each tube of light. And now I ask that our vibrations be raised high above the psychic and astral worlds to the highest realm of illumined truth we each can attain at this time. And now, Mother, Father, God, we place ourselves in service to you and to humanity. We ask that only that which is direct from you be permitted into our perceptions, and that all else of the lower mind be kept out. And we ask that only that which is direct from you be permitted through us. And because we have asked this, we consider it so. So be it.
Take your time, nice deep breath, come back to the space. So, good evening. I want to talk tonight about what it is that identifies you. This is a really good topic. Conversation, and I'm hoping that tonight will be more of a conversation. So, PLN, rather, are you ready to engage with me tonight?
Yeah, I am.
Very good. So, most excellent. What is it that identifies you? And this is a really important component of dissolution work. So, as seekers of truth, above all else, we have to remember that just seeing that the world is polarized and seeing that the personality functions from a dualistic place isn't enough. It's not enough to just see it and to witness it. The difference is made in how you then move forward into your life, right? Because your life is your spiritual journey. And there are concepts that are taught along the way that are very important for you to work hard at holding on to every day as you're living your life. And one of those concepts is that it's not real, that nothing going on here is actually real. Since what we're witnessing in this paradigm is polarized and dualistic in nature, it can't be real, because polarization does not exist in the space of the eternal. Anything that's changeable does not exist in the space of the eternal. And you are the eternal. And as seeker, your journey is to move throughout your life experiences into deeper and deeper wisdom through experience that brings you closer and closer to moving back, so to speak, into the space where the eternal is all that is. And from that space moving forward, then the veils are lifted and there's no more forgetfulness, no more forgetting that you are a personality, and no more forgetting that this world isn't real. No more forgetting that there's no other. There's never been an other. There's only the one. And you are that. So we get locked into concept here. And it is your job as seeker to consistently challenge yourself to uproot all of the concepts that identify you in your sense of who you are. And you have to remember that the vast majority of these concepts are unconscious, that they're hidden from you. So uncovering them is not an easy task. They can be extremely subtle, extremely subtle. And I speak from very personal experience. You could have a piece of writing where a concept is in the writing, it's right there. And when you go back and you're looking for the concepts, you won't even be able to see it until the moment where you do, or the moment where it's even pointed out to you, and then you can't not see it. But you sit there stunned that you tried so hard and you couldn't see it for the longest time, this thing that you're so attached to that it hides from you. And remember, these attachments are all based on your unmet needs, right? And they create desire, and desire creates belief. And belief gives way to using judgment in order to support the belief. And judgment gives way to actions that then are justified, because the justifiers support the judgments, which support the beliefs, which support the desires, which support the unmet needs. So in doing your dissolution work, you're constantly moving deeper and deeper to find the unmet needs. And just finding them, as if that wasn't challenging enough, but just finding them isn't enough to dissolve them out. It's what you do with it then that makes all the difference in the world. And I know I've spoken this a million times, but it always is necessary to speak it again, because it seems very easy for the intellect to forget this component. It's what you do with it. So if you have someone who has greater sight than you, who has pointed something out to you that needs to be looked at, it's your job as seeker to do your absolute very best to take that knowledge, even if it's not your own yet, and or doesn't feel like your own yet anyway, but to take that and apply it the very, very best you can, and to witness where you're falling short, and then do what's necessary to go back and course correct after that. I like to use that word, course correct, because that's what it's like. It's, you know, like you're navigating a ship and sometimes you kind of stray off the course and you just have to course correct, right? The danger lies in not, it's, you know, the human ego loves to hold information, but it doesn't like to apply information unless it serves its agendas, right? And so the ego, what you have to always remember is that the ego can only function from those spaces of domination, control, and manipulation. It always makes decisions, it always makes decisions that support its own self-serving agendas. That's what the ego does. It can even hide as altruism. It can hide as service. It can hide as the heart. The ego is very good at playing itself off as the heart because it's pushing an agenda. And the challenge consistently along the way is to find where those agendas lie and what makes that up, where it came out of. Of course, it always goes back to the same story, right? That whole concept of being cast out by God is the one story playing itself out here. Being cast out, wanting to return, never being able to, trying to return, being pushed back, being angry because you can't, trying harder, being pushed back again, becoming self-righteous in our pain for being separate, pushing God away because of our pain, but desperately clinging to the hope that somehow the concept of being reunited will manifest. That is the ego in a nutshell. And while I can say that none of it is real and that it never happened, which is absolutely true, it doesn't feel like that when you're in it. From the outside, peering in, it's very clear, very, very clear. But when identification is the thing that's running and the thing that's enslaving consciousness, you can't see it. So you have to walk in some faith that there are those who can see and who can help you on your journey as you attempt to see for yourself. Of course, this is really hard because it challenges all those aspects of you that are so entrenched that they're unconscious. And you will find yourself emotionally battling these things as they come up in your life. So all of the things that are held on an unconscious level in your life that need to be seen through, remember, it's not to change anything. It's to see through it, to see it for what it is, a story that has no basis in reality whatsoever. But those stories cling to them so tightly. They seem so personal and they seem so important that it's almost impossible to, you know, navigate your way out of them. But that's the point. The point is you're here to do just that. And so as you continue to attempt to do it, it is emotionally very strenuous and very difficult. Because on one side, you'll have understandings, higher understandings, you'll have knowledge on one side. And on the other side, you have the story, and the story feels like you. And the two will seem to contradict each other. And so you're stuck in the middle saying, how do I navigate this? I'm trying to walk this, but here's my life, right? And I can speak very personally. I can't think of how many times since the time I started working with my guide, I had moments where I said to myself or out loud, but she doesn't know my story. She doesn't know what I'm dealing with. She doesn't know what it's like to be me. Those are wonderful arguments from the ego, but they hold absolutely no water whatsoever from higher perspective. None. It's just the ego fighting for its own limitations like it always does. Oh, I'm the victim. Feel sorry for me. You know, I want liberation, but please believe in my story. That's what the ego says. I want you to be my guide, but please believe in my story. This is my story. This is my life. This is me. This encapsulates me and who I am and all the things that are moving and all that's right and wrong in my world. And your guide has to say, no, it's not you. And you're deluding yourself. So why continue to hold this story that has only brought you pain since the time you picked it up? Why do we hold the story? Well, it's simple. It's because it's comfortable. Just because it's comfortable doesn't mean it feels good, right? But when we're used to holding a story and it's all we know, the idea of venturing into the unknown where that story gets released is too scary. It's easier to be comfortable and miserable than to venture out into the void, not knowing what's going to come next. Because, of course, from the vantage point of the ego, what's going to come next has to be worse than what we're in right now. Why do I say that? Very simply, because if you look at what we term the primal imprint, that is the ego's experience over and over and over again. It has hope, and hope gives it a false expectation that something better is coming. And so we cling to hope. And how many, I mean, look at the self-help world, right? How many different teachers are out there teaching about having a positive attitude and doing affirmations and, you know, the grass is always greener and your day will come. How many of us have heard that? Your day will come, right? And so we cling to that. Okay, my day will come, and so be strong, and I can do it. But that's not these egos experience. The egos experiences, no matter how much positive attitude I feel like I have, at the end of the day, I get sucker punched, right? Nod your heads. Yes, 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 of course. At the end of the day, I get sucker punched. So then, after enough of that, even the ego starts to see hope for what it is. You know, this hope isn't a positive state of mind. If you look at it, it's a tease, right? There to tease you into thinking something could be something that you know deep down it can't be or it won't be. And yet we cling to it, and we only cling to it because our beliefs in good and bad and suffering and joy, we'll say, are so strong that they keep us locked into this pattern where we're constantly clawing and scratching our way through life, trying to find joy, trying to find peace, and trying to find happiness, and trying to find excitement, right? Trying to find anything that feels good. Because anything outside of that is bad. And as soon as you're attached to that, you have completely locked yourself into an unwinnable situation. There's no way out of that situation as long as you hold that that's accurate. Does that make sense? There's no way out. Once you're in that and you do believe that you have to be one way to avoid being the other way, there's no way out. Because every time you get back to the inevitable, you won't allow yourself to stay there long enough to witness what's actually going on. The gift is there. It's in the pain. There's no need to try to get out of the pain. Allow the pain to show you what it is that's hurting you, rather than just skipping over it, rather than saying, I'm in pain because of you. I'm in pain because of that thing, right? The object of our pain is almost always the exterior world. Sometimes we bring it home and say, I'm the object of my own pain, which is good. Step forward. But we don't stay there. We're so afraid to stay there. Why are we so afraid to stay there? Because society has told us it's not okay to stay there. What do we do with children? Do we let them sit in their pain? No. How many of us are willing to allow a child to have a complete meltdown and just allow them to be with their pain? I mean, from the time you have, look at you mothers out there, look at when you had an infant and the infant was old enough to recognize things visually. How many of us with our infants, when the infants got fussy, grabbed for something to shake in front of the baby or someone to make faces in front of the baby, something to get the baby to disconnect from whatever was causing them agitation and get them refocused on something that's going to make them smile? We started from the time they're tiny, right? So is it any wonder that we're all addicted to doing the same thing as adults? It's all we've ever known. So what does that do to us? It puts us in a space where we're just terrified to just sit in it. And if we do, oh my gosh, now I have, you know, depressive disorder. Does it mean you have something chemically wrong with your brain just because you're in pain? No, it doesn't. Maybe it means you're actually looking at what's really going on and starting to deal with what's really going on. Maybe you just don't understand how to deal with it effectively. But the world has decided that it's not, you know, socially acceptable for you to be in pain for any stretch of time. So we get it. We got to fix it. We have to fix it because the doer has to fix everything. And the ego is the ultimate consummate doer, or so it thinks. So let's do what we need to do here. Let's give you drugs and let's put you in psychotherapy and let's, you know, get you addicted to some form of something that swings you out of feeling depressed. So let's get you addicted to binge eating or binge shopping or too much TV, too much disconnect from quote unquote reality, you know. And isn't that our world? How many people are actually living their lives? Almost nobody is actually living their lives. They're functioning on an unconscious level every day. But those of you who would sit through this are at least awake enough to know that that's not what you want for yourself anymore. And you have recognized that you're willing to take steps to at least begin to attempt to get yourself out of the state of unconsciousness that the ego sits in. This is a really big statement, so pay attention. When functioning from the space of the personal self, you are not conscious. I mean, let that sit with you. It is an enormous statement when you really, really allow it in. You're not even conscious. The ego is a program, and it is a program that runs flawlessly. And it's so flawless that it can convince you that it's you. And that you're making choices, and that you have free will, and that you're wrestling with all these problems, and that you're the one taking action, fixing things. None of that is true. You are the witness to the world and nothing more. There's no you that's the doer in your life. So if you can't move to a space where you can begin to be objective, truly, truly objective about your own personal life, you will not make it. You will not transcend the life-death cycle. Certainly not this go-round. Because that is the launching pad for all of it. We have to be completely 100% objective. And in order to be objective, we have to be capable of detaching from our personal stories. It doesn't mean you're disassociating. It's a psychological term. It's a different thing. But you're capable of detaching, which means you can still play the role of the person living the life. But in a moment, you can detach from that role and see it from a broader perspective and see it from back here and see it from a place that doesn't carry an agenda. Until you can see your own agendas, there's only so much you can do. Because just hearing my words or reading the teachings isn't enough. And while they're very necessary, it's not enough without you harnessing the divine will that you carry in order to do what it feels like is wrestling that ego down to the ground, keeping a foot on it. You ever see that statue of Archangel Michael with his foot on? It's on a demon, I guess. He's got his sword up. Just about to drive it through the thing. Beautiful. And that's what it feels like. Wrestling your demons to the ground. And holding them down with your foot. Stay there. Because you obviously aren't going anywhere. And if I let you get up, you will attack me again. I get that. So I'm going to keep my foot on you. I'll keep my eye on you, right? The price for freedom is eternal vigilance. Absolutely. In this world of duality, do you think there comes a point where the world itself stops clinging at you to try to get consciousness to identify with some concept or other? Mm-mm. This world is this world. And as long as you're in it, you are the witness here, walking around in what feels like a physical body, that will continue. And the tests become more and more subtle along the way too. Right? It is not a journey for the faint of heart. So we have to be able to really, really hold ourselves to task. That, okay, this is the work I signed up to do. And in this moment, I'm dealing with something that feels very challenging, right? And rather than continue to try to get those who are here to assist me to latch on to my story, what I need to do is the exact opposite. Do my best to let go of the story and listen to what those people who are here to assist me are saying. Take it to heart and do my absolute very best to function from that level, no matter how hard it feels. And sometimes it feels excruciatingly hard. And I say that from personal experience. I always say to people, there will be moments on your path that will bring you to your knees. And I am not joking. I've had it more than once. Where in that moment, that sense of what I would just call despair is so overwhelming, you drop to your knees. Because you know what you have to do. But the ego doesn't think you're capable of doing it. And it feels impossible. And it feels like you won't make it out. And if you do it, you'll never forgive yourself, or you'll be the worst person in the world, or whatever it is the story is that's running. You know, how can I live with myself? This other person's going to hate me. Whatever that story is, it feels incredibly hard to stand up against. But understand this, that all of these experiences that come to you in your life are exactly tailor-made for your journey. You wouldn't be in that experience if it wasn't absolutely necessary. So your spiritual journey is experiential, above all else, experiential. Reading it doesn't mean anything. Watching it on a video doesn't mean anything. Hearing someone speak the teachings doesn't mean anything. Not in the greater picture. Not that they don't serve a purpose, don't get me wrong. How you live your life means everything. And when you're, and I think we spoke about this last week, once you're conscious that there's something playing out, right? When you're conscious of it, you have a responsibility to now function from that level of awareness. I think last week, if I'm not mistaken, I talked about stealing, didn't I? Like a little kid stealing from his parents. I think I did. Yeah. And the first time, before that child had an understanding of what stealing meant, karmically, doesn't mean a whole lot. But after that little child got a lecture and some form of punishment, probably, he had a good understanding of what it meant to steal. And if he does it again, there's repercussions on a different level than just physical. Because once you know better, your responsibility is to do better. You understand? This is where the path truly becomes challenging. Truly. Once you know better and you've been trained enough, you've trained consciousness enough to be able to go in and find where you're running an agenda, where another person is running an agenda that involves you, where they're manipulating you, attempting to control you. At that point, when you see it and you're clear about that, you have to function to move out of it. Not justify the behavior of another. Not say, oh, well, she can't help it. She's doing the best she can. No, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter the situation for the other person. If they're manipulating you, you as a seeker have to move out of it. And that's where it becomes so challenging, because it challenges all our concepts of what it is to be kind and what it is to be good and you name it. Right? They all get challenged. And now you have to take steps that aren't going to feel good. Because what have we all been taught? You know, you don't hurt other people. And if you do hurt other people, you should feel bad about it, right? We're all taught that from the time we're little. We're taught hitting isn't right, which it isn't, but we're taught hitting isn't right. We're taught that unkind words aren't right. They make you a bad person. We're taught that, you know, you're a bad person when you function like that. And so now here you are in a space where the only way out is to be that thing that you were taught not to be. Do you think that feels good? That doesn't feel good. Not for the ego. Now, from a higher perspective, it doesn't feel anything. It's what's necessary. You do what's necessary. There's no story there. It's only the ego that's going to carry the story and feel some sense of remorse or guilt, shame. So here's the challenge, right? So where are you identified? What concepts, you know, because it's easy in the beginning to say, well, I'm identified as mother. I'm identified as husband. I'm identified as child. I'm identified as friend. Okay, these are easy to see. But do you also realize that you've identified yourself with concepts? We can look at mother and go, well, a baby birthed through this body that made me a mother. That's very tangible. No question about that. But if I told you you are identified with being of service, what does that look like? Where can you point to in the world that shows that you're identified as that? Well, maybe there are some places you can point to in the world, but it's harder when it's truly just a concept. And those concepts enslave you. They absolutely enslave you. And I bring up service because that's a huge one, especially for people just like you. If you're a seeker, if you're a light worker, you have a concept of what it is to be of service. You have a heart that actually desires to be of service. And is that even possible? Can the heart be of service without any attachment to it? Yeah. Does it all the time. That's what the heart is. But see, you've taken a concept such as what service means here and what it entails here and the positive attributes that you would put to anyone of service here, and you've believed them to be true. So here in the world, we would say that service, if I'm in service, it means that I am respectable, I am kind, I am giving, I would be seen as having honor and even valor, right? In this world, is that true? Sure. Oh, gosh, yeah. I mean, who would look at someone like Mother Teresa and not attach those adjectives to her? Of course. But is it true? And as soon as I say to you that the concept of service falls apart under scrutiny, you're going to say, how? Does anybody here could tell me how the concept of service falls apart under scrutiny? Anyone? Kellyanne, I'm actually going to call on you. I'm going to make you say something. What you got?
I think because no matter what we're doing, when we're trying to be of service, that we have some sort of expectation.
Uh-huh.
There's some end point, or, you know, that we're hoping comes out of it.
True. True. And it goes deeper than that. Anyone want to take a stab at what's even deeper? Okay. Rashonda, go ahead.
We create a story behind it. And then even how you said that with the being of service, we could then create our own concept, which then is this enslavement again, or back inside the patterning with what we like to say is in our, which what is in our heart, but now we've created another story, a concept, and kind of disconnected, you know, with that thing that is, that doesn't have a story. And we made something, now we bring it basically in the world and then move and operate from there. So that's when it gets under scrutiny, because now we believe it is who we are.
Mm-hmm. And so let's play the game a little further. In order for service to be real, what has to exist? You want to try that, Rashonda?
God.
What's that?
Truth, God.
Okay. What else has to? Who's of service?
You.
Okay. To whom?
You.
Is the service rendered?
To whom is the service rendered? To God, it's all God. It's all one. It's all love.
Okay, so back up a second. Bring it here.
Okay.
This reality.
To humanity.
Okay, so let's say humanity.
Okay.
Or let's just say you.
Okay, you, okay.
You personally.
Okay. Me.
All right. Okay.
Okay.
In order for service to function, you have to have a giver of service,
mm-hmm.
and a
receiver.
Receiver of service.
Yes.
How does that work? How does that work if there's only one?
So it's still you and you. Is it just all?
There's nothing else.
Wow.
Who are you going to serve?
Wow.
Who are you going to serve?
Wow.
The eternal is
you.
Singular.
Right. Oh my, that's awesome.
Uh-huh.
Now, you and you.
For everyone listening, sit with that, because this is really, really powerful. It shows how subtle concept is. In order for something like service to be real, the only way it can be real is if there is someone who gives service and someone who receives service. If there is only one, there can't be a giver or a receiver. Because in order for the concept to hold any kind of water, it has to be dualistic. Now, take every concept that you can muster and apply that. And you will see that everything falls apart. It all falls apart. There's nothing left. The whole world, as you perceive it, is you anyway. This person you think you're helping is you, because there's no one outside of it. There is no one outside of you. This person you feel sorry for is you. This person you hate is you. the person you love is you. Byron Katie says a beautiful thing, like one of her kind of key statements is, who would you be without your story? And that's what this line of questioning leads to, because the stories completely fall apart under scrutiny. And you could see in that little bit there with Pielian and Rashonda both chiming in, that when we started with what is the concept of service, you see what it took just to get in deep enough to really see what was sitting there, right? Would any of you have seen that on your own? No. I mean, and that's what I mean. It's so subtle, it hides. But now that I pointed it out to you, does it seem obvious? Raise your hand if it seems kind of obvious from the space of when you understand dualism. Yeah, well, of course. I mean, because in order to serve, there has to be someone who receives it. How do you serve nothing? Right? Kellyanne, you have a question.
So now we want to look at every single concept, right? So if I look at a concept, like if I'm being the objective observer and I come across a concept, and I pick it apart and I can find the dualities, and I do that with every concept I come across, will that help me find, I guess, my attachments, and also help me to release the concepts?
Well, what do you think? Who's there to release the concepts to begin with?
This question.
Is the concept of some kind of a tangible thing?
No.
It needs to be released. A concept isn't real. It's a concept, right?
Yes.
Yes. And if a concept was real, then it would require change, wouldn't it? But we aren't here to change anything. We're here to see through it.
But we do want to see it, though, don't we?
Well, sure, it has to be seen.
Okay.
Without seeing it, you can't see through it, right?
So if I just see it, then... If I just see it, then I don't have to, I feel like we do have to pick it apart still.
Sure. You got to get down to the bottom of it.
Right? Because we do have to see, like, well, obviously I've got some attachments to this concept. I mean, everything's a...
Well, you don't have attachments to that concept.
Yeah, I guess I might not have attachments. Well, no. No, I don't have attachments to all concepts. That's...
Do you have attachments to any concepts?
No.
Why not?
I guess it's beliefs that we have attachments to. Not the concepts.
Really? who has beliefs? All of you, who has beliefs? Anybody have a belief? Oh, look at that. Look at all the Really?
The ego has beliefs.
Does it?
Isn't that what you're looking for?
And what's the ego?
Not us. According to you.
A field of forces, a field of energetic forces that coalesce,
yeah,
and upon identification by consciousness become seemingly real. It never happened. See? It never happened.
Why is the seeker, though? You see what I'm trying to do here?
Why is it that when at every stage of awakening, I'll term it that way. Why is it that at every stage of awakening, in those moments, what comes is just laughter?
I think because you realize how simple it was.
Because it's so simple. It's so simple. Seemingly so difficult in it, but on the outside, so simple. And if we look at what we just looked at with the concept of service, oh, is that one that just entraps so many people? And I include myself in that. That was an ongoing thing in my journey. And I mean ongoing. Because that's my life, right? My life is service. I mean, you could look at any aspect of my life, and that is who I am, whether I'm serving my husband or serving my children or serving my students. It's all about service, right? So when you look at someone who seems to be functioning from that space of service, how easy is it to identify them with service? And how easy is it for the person who's doing it, right? But the physical being taking the action to get identified in that concept that all of this stuff out here is actually real and I'm serving it. And in the moment when it's witnessed that it's all the one, falls apart. There is no other. There is no other. And so all of you tonight, you know, you can look at your beloved, this person that you thought was real. And go, oh. Oh my gosh, it's just me. It's my own projection. Projections of aspects that are entrenched to the point where I can't see it for myself. So it shows up here as him and her and the cat and whatever else. Because each one is trying to show me the totality of all the spaces where identification has locked in. Some things I can witness, and then some things I can't. Because as long as I believe that there is an I, that there is a separate I, with the beliefs, with the needs, with the desires, with the attachments, with the judgments, with the justifiers. As long as I believe that all of that is actually happening, then I can work it forever and still not see through it. Kellyanne, you're nodding your head. Are you having a moment?
Yes, I am. Yes, because I was just thinking about like that whole back and forth we just had, and I realized that, you know what? I'm trying to see how I can put this into words. I think as we start this journey, we get so used to just picking it apart and picking it apart and picking it apart. And like what you just said, like I feel like sometimes we actually corner ourselves into becoming like, so that it's like just this eternal like cycle.
Yes.
On, and we don't necessarily have to be on it. Yeah.
Brilliant. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And absolutely accurate. Now, it's not as simple, or let's say simple, it's not as easy as saying, well, we don't have to be on it, and so, like, I won't be, right? Because you have to remember that consciousness is enslaved in identification. So it's not as simple as having the moment of intellectual understanding where things do kind of lock in and you go, oh, okay, oh my gosh, like I actually see that. Well, that's wonderful. And it means that it did reach into a level of consciousness and take hold and, you know, shook it up a little bit. That's great. But you're going to forget it, right? Because as long as it's entrenched, it's entrenched. So you have these moments of breakthroughs, right? But they don't last because they can't yet. So there is good purpose for picking it apart, right? And picking it apart. Very valid. And it is true that at a certain point, that becomes a trap in and of itself. There's one of my students, very specifically, who was told to just stop writing, just for that reason, because it becomes another addictive component of the identification that I have to write about it and I have to process it. It turns into another thing that enslaves you at a certain point. But it's up to your guide to tell you when you've reached that point, not for you to decide for yourself, because I promise you that the mind is just going to utilize that as another means of keeping you from actually doing what you're supposed to, what you should be doing for yourself on the journey. Because the ego has no, you know, ability to be anything other than self-serving. It can't be. Because the only thing that exists for the ego is the ego. So, of course, everything that it does for itself. So, ego, singular. The eternal, singular. Never the twain shall meet. You're looking at one that is real. The other one is just a projection. Any question?
No, but it is actually time. That crept up on us fast.
For meditation? Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So no question before we leave this topic. This is a really big one. Really big one. This is a very advanced thing to get to tonight. Very advanced. But I brought it forward because it's so necessary to see just how subtle it gets, right? And when you're in a situation where you're emotionally really wrestling with something, and you're wrestling with it, right? Doing the back and forth of, should I do this? Should I do that? That's your indicator that this is, you've got to get in that deep to uncover it, to really see the components of the things that are motivating your behavior, right? Because they're not conscious, they're unconscious. And as much as the mind will think, this is why I'm doing it, and it'll have all kinds of reasons for why it's doing what it's doing, none of it's accurate. You've got to be able to get in objectively and go deeper to uncover that level, and then to be able to see through the whole story that's running. Now from that space, now you can move and make choices that will be in alignment with you, with your understandings, and not outside of alignment, right? They'll be more beneficial to your journey than they would otherwise. So hopefully we will see you next Thursday night for satsang again. Thank you so much for joining us, and I'll see you next week. Bye, everybody.
You are divine.